Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Horrible floods in Texas. Can't miss it.
The storm is bringing another punch to the shore.
Has scorched over 117,000 acres, triggering evacuation orders for more than 800 square miles.
And if you're going to go out early before the air quality index starts to really climb and get worse.
Well, that hurricane that was so devastating to the Gulf Coast and New Orleans.
Welcome to a special report from Odyssey News, the year in natural disasters. The 4th of July holiday, usually a cause for celebration, took a dark turn in 2025 with Texas floods that killed 9 in the span of a few hours. Camp Mystic, a place where helpless kids and terrified staff were overcome by quickly rising waters, became a flashpoint. The devastation along the Guadalupe River, outside of San Antonio, has drawn a massive search effort, as many are reporting that officials face questions over their preparedness and the speed of their initial actions.
CBS's Janet Shamlian is in Kerr County.
For the children who are at Camp Mystic, we're hearing many of their older siblings went there. Their mothers went there. Camp Mystic has been around for almost 100 years. In fact, they would have celebrated their 100th anniversary next year.
CBS's Maurice Dubois spoke to Carmen Jaime and her 8-year-old son Esteban, who escaped their RV campsite just in time.
What do you think of this whole situation?
Scared.
Scared?
Nervous.
What scared you the most?
The river rising up.
What did it sound like?
Racking. All of that, like tree branches falling off, like chairs flying, barbecue pits, everything.
Did you think we were going to make it out on time?
Probably not, but we safely did.
There are so many questions about the tragedy that unfolded in Texas. So how did this flooding come out of seemingly nowhere to overwhelm the area? Daniel DeBrunoff, the chief meteorologist at KRLD Radio in Dallas, explains.
Well, many factors contributed to the flooding in the Hill Country early on 4th of July morning. We had leftover moisture from Tropical Storm Barry that came out of Mexico, and we had slow-moving upper-level disturbances that triggered these showers and storms, along with rich moisture at all levels of the atmosphere. Also, the topography had a lot to do with this as well. Well, I spent over 3 years in San Antonio, and I got a two-month tour of the area, 100-mile radius around San Antonio that does include the Hill Country, Kerrville, Comfort area. And the topography, the lack of topsoil, 1 inch of topsoil across much of the Hill Country, bedrock below that, slow-moving thunderstorms and heavy rain all contributed to the widespread flooding. It just happened to rain over foot just northwest of the Kerrville area, and that's where two of the forks of the Guadalupe, where it starts, merged into one just northwest of town, and that's what caused all the problems. Well, many areas of Texas over the holiday weekend saw 8 to 12 inches of rain. Some areas saw even higher totals, especially into the Hill Country and in central Texas. So different areas of the state saw flooding. Rain causing more fatalities, not just in the Hill Country, but in central Texas.
I'm John Little. In disasters, Mr. Rogers used to tell kids,
always look for the helpers.
And that's exactly what we're seeing right now. We're seeing a lot of help going to the Hill Country, including a group from Good Shepherd Episcopal School in Dallas, where volunteers and food trucks left this morning for the flood zone. KRLD's Russell Scott reporting from the school on Midway near North Haven. Russell.
The truck left around 7 o'clock this morning. It was packed with donations, with cleaning supplies, with utensils, with everything you would need in a disaster for all of those people who are trying to get their lives back together. Liz Flexus, the head of the Childhood Development Program here at Good Shepherd, tells me they had about 24 people out here yesterday packing the truck. She says some of those who were packing the truck were former students or current students who have been to Camp Mystic or have friends who have attended Camp Mystic in years past.
We now know that two Dallas children have been confirmed killed in the flooding. Blair and Brooke Harbor, sisters and students at St. Rita Catholic School in Dallas, died after their cabin along the Guadalupe River was swept away. Continuing our team coverage now, KRLD's Alan Skaya. Alan, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, the St. Rita Catholic School, they say both those kids were rising students. They say the flash flood touched every corner of their hearts. Blair Harbor was in eighth grade, Brooke Harbor in sixth, and the school says the two were staying in that cabin with their grandparents. All four got swept away. And in that note they sent last night, school said the grandparents still had not been found. The girls were found 15 miles downriver. School says even in their last moments, the two held tightly to each other, showing their lasting bond and trust in God.
A Dallas student attending Camp Mystic last week is reflecting on the devastation and loss of life that's breaking her heart.
She's 13. Stella Thompson has spent part of the last six summers at the camp.
I think while it was going on, I kind of felt like a sense of numbness.
She tells NBC5 she and her bunkmates were safe because they were housed on higher ground out of sight of the seething river. She and her group were rescued by a military truck that was able to cross through the flooding and debris. It was only then they knew how many young lives had been swept away.
Among the most prominent questions about the disaster in Texas is, where were the warnings? The Texas Tribune reported local and state officials were quick to point to weather forecasts that did not accurately predict the intensity of the rainfall. Kerr County Judge Rob Kelly, when he was asked why camps along the Guadalupe were not evacuated, told reporters the county had no reason to believe that this was going to be anything like what's happened here. Here's Chris Fox reporting on KRLD Radio.
One of the things that we haven't spoken, we've spoken a lot about first responders, but we have not talked about how can this be prevented? And that question has been asked of county commissioner, or county judge rather, Rob Kelly. Should they have evacuated? The idea of flood warning systems. Now, flood warning system, ironically, was brought up in the state legislature. House Bill 13 passed in the House and died in the Senate, would have given, would have set aside grant money for things like flood warning systems, which was an issue, obviously, in Texas in 2015 in Wimberley when the Blanco River flooded, killing 13. And at one point, you know, here it was brought up. But Rob Kelly said that that it was too expensive and the people didn't want it because flash floods happen so quickly here it wouldn't really be a benefit. But I think people are rethinking that now, especially since we're looking at 82 dead.
Yeah, and it sounds like that the county at times had talked about putting in some kind of warning system or enhancing their warning system, but balking at the cost along the way, both maybe citizens and lawmakers doing so.
Yeah, the idea being too expensive. That was what Kerr County Judge Rob Kelly said Saturday. And that was brought up in 2015, like I said, after the Wimberley floods, but also in 2017 after flash floods here. And so the fact that they haven't done anything like a siren system or flood or river gauges along the river, the idea being that it's just too expensive. And this is an area that has a budget of $67 million, and anything over $1 million is really kind of considered out of the budget.
And today, families are left with silence where laughter once filled the air. Rescuers still searching for the missing. And the questions about preparedness, they're only getting louder. But as we said before, look for the helpers, look for the first responders and the volunteers converging to offer that help to flooding victims and survivors. One group shouldering the load is Texans on Mission. They're a Christian ministry. They focus on disaster relief, water impact, building and student discipleship. And the group's Amy Frewston says they're in it for the long haul.
An eighth generation farmer and rancher, Sid Miller is the 12th commissioner of the Texas Department of Agriculture. And he talked to KRLD.
I can tell you there's hundreds and hundreds of miles of fencing gone, structures, barns, hay washed downriver, tractors underwater. We found cattle and livestock in the top of trees dead. Those are all going to have to be buried and cleaned up. I don't know if your listeners can understand the magnitude of this disaster, but in less than 24 hours, there was an equivalent amount of water came down the Guadalupe River that would go over Niagara Falls in a month and a half. Protections are very resilient. You won't find Texans sitting on the street curb waiting for FEMA and the government to show up to help them. But we're there. If our neighbors need us, we're there. If they need shelter, we're there.
And people are the priority. But have you heard of any estimates of the number of cattle killed, livestock that may have been impacted?
Hundreds and hundreds of miles of fencing, barns and structures gone. Crops are either flooded or washed out. Crops are devastated. Livestock, if you were in one of those river valleys and in one of the, you know, 8 or 10 rivers that flooded, you probably lost livestock.
Yeah, the human impact is really astounding. And then you think about these farmers and ranchers who many of them have just got the crop in the ground for the year. You know, as a Texan, it doesn't matter where you are in the state, you feel impacted by this whenever you see your fellow Texans going through something like this.
You know, those prayers are much needed.
You're listening to a year-end On Deadline special from Odyssey.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here, wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day. Yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
DSW's semi-annual sale is back. Take 50% off all clearance shoes in stores for a limited time. Literally every single clearance item at your designer shoe warehouse store is on sale right now. Sneakers, boots, dress shoes, if they're on the clearance racks, they're 50% off. So what are you waiting for? Don't sleep on these savings. Get to DSW ASAP. It's all or nothing, people. Shop the DSW semi-annual sale today.
Tonight's meal, tilapia surprise with boiled cabbage. Begin cooking steps 1 through 50 now.
Are you kidding me? Making dinner shouldn't feel like doing a 1,000-piece puzzle. With Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals, the hard part's already done. Pre-chopped ingredients, zero stress. Just assemble, bake, and enjoy. No complicated steps, no mountain of dishes. Try assemble and bake today. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Fires have ravaged much of Los Angeles County, including celebrity mansions and iconic structures. Could be the worst domestic natural disaster in our nation's history. It started as just a spark, but quickly turned into a roaring blaze that burned thousands of acres, 10,000 buildings, and caused the evacuation of more than 150,000 people. Families, rich and poor, have lost their homes. And people lost not only their most valuable physical assets, but also their memories, their photos, their keepsakes. From entrepreneurs to small business owners, people from all over the LA area have lost their livelihoods. Artists lost their work. Home businesses lost their infrastructures.
At least 130,000 residents are under evacuation orders in Los Angeles County as red flag warnings remain in effect. Reporter John Baird, who joins us from the Pacific Palisades area.
I drove literally a quarter mile up the street. There was a school on fire this morning. There's also a neighborhood where a number of homes, I'm told, are on fire this morning. The Gelson supermarket, apparently, in Pacific Palisades is burned to the ground. This is still a very active fire, even though the winds have lessened and you don't see the chaos, and you don't have the strong winds that we had yesterday morning. I mean, this fire is 0% contained. It's burned more than 17,000 acres and damaged or destroyed more than 1,000 structures.
I've been struck by watching some of the coverage that this just shows that fire does not discriminate. All sorts of people have lost their homes.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because we want to make sure that people understand. It's not like you drive up into Pacific Palisades and everything is destroyed. It's not like that. You can drive down a block and you'll see a couple of houses that burned, and then 10 houses are fine. You turn the corner and the entire block is wiped out. You turn the corner again, you got two houses on the left that are burned and five houses on the right. It's that kind of thing over a widespread area. You know, even yesterday when I was just a little northwest of here, you know, a mile or two, which is technically unincorporated Malibu, I mean, that whole street I was on was practically wiped out. Something like 36 homes I counted in that one stretch. And then I went farther into the neighborhood yesterday, and a lot of other homes were burned. It was just a night.
In Altadena, California, Bonnie Brimacombe is a principal of a school that burned to the ground.
Have you been in contact with some of the parents and students that may have lost something or everything out of this?
Yes, unfortunately we have. We've heard a lot of devastating stories.
So tell us about this community, about in your school and beyond, how badly they're being tested right now.
Oh, man, it's been so hard, right? We have gone through so much as a community in general. This is a really small school up in Altadena. We have two campuses serving over 800 students. But schools in general, we've just come through COVID. We were able to find our way back up. We were able to support all of our students and get our test scores to some of the highest in the area. And then here we are heading into our winter break, enjoying our family time. And we had a beautiful community event as we headed out, where we were able to give service back to our community and raise money and canned food drive and for the Pasadena Humane Society. And then we can't come back to school. Our kids wake up in the middle of the night and have to be evacuated. So we're already a school that focuses on social emotional support. So we're fully ready to have our kids back, and we know how to support them through our counseling system, through our everyday lessons that our teachers teach on how to be in a community and how to cope with the emotions that we're feeling. So all we need is a place to be. We need a facility to put our kids and bring us all back face to face in person.
Half the students in your school had their homes destroyed by the Eaton fire. How do you wrap your head around that fact that half those students directly affected by the loss of their homes, all their belongings, their memories?
It's everything. They've lost everything. And usually what we can say is just come back to school. It's a safe, consistent place for you to be. And unfortunately, now they lost their home and they lost their school.
Many people have been providing donations to support those who have lost everything. And in the LA area, the community has gathered together to do everything from help displaced animals to making hundreds of meals for those in need. However, not everyone has good intentions. Now that there's a need for things like housing, some people are actually looking to take advantage. Actor Chad Lowe joined Odyssey in LA to raise a red flag on this disturbing twist amid the already harrowing chaos.
First, it's bad enough to go what you and so many others have gone through, but then also just this double whammy of the aftermath and people who want to prey on these unfortunate victims.
Yeah, and I wanted to make sure that the word was out to people that price gouging is illegal. So 10% above the asking price can be offered, but during a national declaration of a natural disaster or a national emergency, anything beyond that is considered price gouging. And what I personally, I can explain to you, have run into. I have my wife and our three daughters who lost her home in the Palisades, and we have found multiple occasions where the listing price that's on the MLS is now bumped up by $3,000 to $4,000. And we've had also situations where there are 30 offers for a property, for a house or a condominium, and the owners are saying that they're saying to us, make your best offer. So I also want to assume the best of people. I'm going to assume that those people don't know what they're doing is illegal. But if you accept more than 10% above, you are breaking the law, and that is price gouging. And I especially think of the people that are affected in the Altadena, Pasadena areas. You know, the West Side is a bubble, and many, many of us, if not all of us, obviously, many of us have the means to try to pick up the pieces and start over. But many people don't. And it's those people who I'm really heartbroken for that are being taken advantage of in their most desperate times of need. So let's assume people don't understand raising the price of the of what they're offering is illegal, and just educate them and let them know that they absolutely cannot do that to people right now.
Contractors, the legal ones that are above board, they're overwhelmed. And so we see a flood of people coming in from all over, and we don't know who to trust. And some of them are charging outrageous prices for their services.
Yeah, and I have confidence after speaking with our new district attorney that he's going to be on top of this. This is such a desperate time for all of us. We're all traumatized. We're all emotional. And so, you know, we're all vulnerable because of that.
Questions are mounting. What do we know about how the fire started? Why did they grow so overwhelming?
Almost a year after it broke out, and there is still a lot of criticism over how it was handled. Because of that, calls now for an independent investigation into the fire. This after a bombshell LA Times report that showed an LA City battalion chief ordering a fire crew to abandon a smoldering hotspot 6 days before it reignited and eventually became the Palisades Fire. Here's John Baird.
LA's mayor asked the interim fire chief to investigate this further, but an anonymous letter sent to the mayor and two council members says the LA Fire Department cannot be trusted to investigate itself. The letter was supposedly written by some current and former LA firefighters who want an independent investigation. LA City Council Member Tracy Park agrees that there should be an independent probe into what happened.
We deserve the answers. The Pacific Palisades deserves the answers, and every taxpayer in the city deserves to know.
Alexandra von Tiergarten lost her home in the Palisades fire, and she also believes there should be a neutral investigation.
It would seem to me that there would need to be someone that was independent looking at all of this, because the fire department, you know, is connected to city government in general. So I would feel more comfortable if it was an independent taking a look at it.
She is still hoping to rebuild her home, but isn't sure yet. Meantime, the LA Fire Department declined to comment on the anonymous letter.
An arrest made in connection with the deadly Palisades fire.
Today marks a significant moment in a long road to justice for our community.
We're here to name it for what it is: arson.
Investigators say 29-year-old Jonathan Rinderneck maliciously ignited the Lockman fire on New Year's Day, which days later ignited one of LA's most destructive wildfires in history, the Palisades fire.
Law enforcement got to work and by January 24th had identified and interviewed the defendant. During his interview, he lied about where he was when he first saw the Lockman fire, claiming he was near the bottom of a hiking trail. Geolocation data for the 911 call showed that he was standing above the fire in a clearing merely 30 feet from the blaze as it rapidly grew.
U.S. Attorney Bill Asaley says Rinderneck, who used to live in the Palisades, was listening to a French rap song about fire as he watched crews put out the Lockman fire, which investigators say went underground and reignited as the Palisades fire. They even say Rinderneck's ChatGPT showed a dystopian painting of a burning forest and a crowd running from it. The ATF's Kitty Cooper says the evidence against Rinderneck is extensive.
We collected more than 13,000 items of evidence.
Rinderneck is facing federal arson charges. The Palisades fire claimed 12 lives and destroyed thousands of homes and businesses.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here, wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day. Yeah. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
DSW's semi-annual sale is back. Take 50% off all clearance shoes in stores for a limited time. Literally every single clearance item at your designer shoe warehouse store is on sale right now. Sneakers, boots, dress shoes. If they're on the clearance racks, they're 50% off. So what are you waiting for? Don't sleep on these savings. Get to DSW ASAP. It's all or nothing, people. Shop the DSW semi-annual sale today.
You know how everything's a subscription now? Music, movies, even socks. I swear if I...
To continue this ad, please upgrade to Premium Plus Platinum.
What? No, anyway, Blue Apron...
This is a pay-per-listen ad. Please confirm your billing.
Oh, that's annoying. At least with the new Blue Apron, there's no subscription needed. Get delicious meals delivered without the weekly plan.
Wait, no subscription?
Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Hurricane Katrina made landfall at 6:10 a.m. on August 29, 2005. It blasted through Louisiana and Mississippi. That is a day we'll never forget. The levees broke, but New Orleans' spirit did not.
My fear is absolutely that the models are correct, and that this is going to prove to be a truly killer storm.
Cautiously optimistic. It keeps moving west. However, I am getting gas.
Oh, yeah, we out of here. We're gone.
You're still hearing us and you haven't left yet, or you haven't made plans on leaving? Please leave. I hate to say this, but I just don't have enough body bags.
Anyway, let me reiterate, folks. Downtown New Orleans looks like somebody dropped a bomb on it. It looks like Beirut. There's broken glass everywhere.
People are dying. They don't have homes. They don't have jobs. The city of New Orleans will never be the same. In this time.
We're both pretty speechless here.
Yeah, I don't know what to say.
I gotta go.
Okay.
Keep in touch. Keep in touch.
Okay. Can we take a break?
So, that's what it sounded like in New Orleans on August 29th, 2005. Terror. Hopelessness. 911 calls that went to busy signals. Women worried about their babies, finding ladders to try to climb onto roofs. But the city didn't stay there. It found a way to move forward. Here's Newell Normand with what it took to get New Orleans back after Katrina.
And the reason why we are sinking is because we levied the river for trade that benefits the whole country. And Katrina was caused by basically an engineering failure of the national U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, not by anything that anybody here did wrong. So, yeah, as you can tell, it got under my skin a little bit. And 20 years later, we're still having the same conversation. It was a much more nuanced event, that there were extraordinary heroic acts over, frankly, not just in the aftermath, but over many years to help bring this place back in many ways better than before. And that these kind of simplistic, trite, cliched ideas and images really do a disservice, again, not just to the people of New Orleans, but to the entire country and world, because there are a lot of lessons that can be learned from this if it's seen in its totality. And so, yeah, it was because, and in some cases, Noel, I think it's just laziness. In some cases, it's ideological. There seem to be publications, both domestic and international, that want to be able to look down on this place and ask why those crazy Cajuns ever build down there by the water. But in any case, I think it's very important that we speak truth to the media and to the public. And hopefully what we're creating today will last and inform media and maybe even research going forward.
Still, 20 years later, have a lot to do, quite frankly.
Yeah, I think that you could certainly point out the places that we have failed. I think it's important to point out the places where we have succeeded. For example, the most basic one that the world doesn't necessarily appreciate, which is that the $15 billion hurricane and storm damage system that we put in the water around the South Shore means that if we were hit by a Hurricane Katrina-like event tomorrow, we would be bone dry. We fixed that one. Yeah. And I was talking to Doug Thornton, and he said, you know, Michael, looking back on the dome and looking back on everything that we had to do to bring back a city that and a region that was almost 100% underwater for weeks, he said, I don't think people understand how close this place was to not coming back, how many extraordinary efforts, and in some cases, how many things had just to fall into place in order for us to not just come back, but to come back to the point where we just hosted the greatest Super Bowl ever, where we have a burgeoning tech sector, where we're building the only greenfield new multi-billion-dollar port in the country, where we're the epicenter of the energy revolution, where we're still the number two or number one city in America for travelers. This was not foregone as a conclusion in the weeks and months after Katrina. It was a lot of efforts, and there are many people who get credit, including one who I think does not get enough credit, is Kathleen Blanco. A lot of people are mentioning that to me, Governor Blanco.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there were some things that were done. Obviously, the immediate response to the storm was not good. Folks asked me about what was the most frustrating thing in the aftermath of Katrina, and I said it was the level of friction that existed between the federal government, state government, and local government. And it was like we were constantly fighting our own in order to figure out what the next steps were going to be. And a lot of that is, you know, and I think a lot of folks learned a very important lesson. Cannot rely on FEMA. And it's not a criticism of FEMA. FEMA is a part-time agency. I've said this a million times. If you don't control it, it ain't going to happen. And that requires investment at the local level. There's a big discussion about the future of FEMA. I think we closed our Katrina books in 2015 or 16. Not because of any fault of our own. We had already done it. We've already rehabbed all the stuff that we had money for. We were just trying to get the money. I mean, we had to set ourselves up financially to be able to sustain ourselves, you know, and hopefully we're going to be able to redefine what FEMA, I don't think FEMA should go away by any stretch of the imagination, but we ought to redefine their role, because I do strongly believe that we can do it better than they
can. What FEMA brings is scale, right, because it's the entire nation. So we need to figure a way to federalize that scale to get the cash where it needs to be, that as a nation, we have to learn to get to the left side of the disaster curve, which means to put in policies and to execute on those policies so that when there is a natural hazard, and we're going to see more and more of them in the future, they don't become disasters. That's really the only way out of this, is to make sure that we no longer have to be resilient in the sense that we get knocked down and get back up again, but we're resilient in the true scientific sense, which is that we actually don't break in the first place. And that's truly the way out of this as a nation, to not have to rely on FEMA, because we've built and planned our communities in a way that they don't get flooded or they don't burn down. So we need to work on both sides, both parts of the equation.
In the aftermath of Katrina, we had a lot of folks that were really afraid to make decisions. You know, what happened to Jefferson Parish is it just took off. I mean, and we came back faster than anyone.
That's right.
Because we recognized that we could once we started making decisions, you know. But, you know, the city, unfortunately, wallowed in indecision for a long, long time, maybe a decade after the storm.
It's you know, why you need a military type leader to say either lead, follow, or get out of the way. And otherwise, the political disincentives for making a decision can really cause a place to stagnate for even longer than it needs to. Let everybody know, everybody who suffered and lost through Katrina in the immediate aftermath and the years following, that there are so many people out here who are still fighting, who are still being compelled to move forward by that memory. And the way that we are intending to honor those who suffered and lost is by continuing to build a city and region that fulfills its true promise. So even though Katrina was a generation ago, its memory and the power of that memory is still very fresh.
Yep, absolutely. Talking back and forth with Jerry Bologna, the JEDCO president and CEO. So we're about to approach the end of 2025. kind of sticks out for you in 2025?
Just the breadth of the projects that we handled this year. And we firmly believe, like all economic development, it starts with the retention of our existing companies, because that's the greatest indicator of future success. Companies like Amazon, the new same-day delivery center that they opened this year, that was a direct result of their experience working with us previously. We're going to deliver what we tell them we're going to deliver. It was a smooth process, so they were like, we're going to invest more heavily in Jefferson. Companies like Latrim, who have operations all over the world, but we retain their headquarters because we work closely with them. We support them from workforce to tax incentives across the board, and that's just the way we do it. And then the business traction takes care of itself.
California had wildfires. Texas had deadly floods. The Gulf Coast remembered the worst natural disaster in history. And the Northeast and Midwest had something different. Extremes. From record heat to Arctic cold to a summer of smog. Here's more.
From the northern white pines of the Moose to the powdered slopes under the skis of Lindsey Vonn. From rainy days that bring too much to sweltering heat that cancels fall marathons. It's not your grandparents' weather anymore. Dr. John Abraham is a professor of engineering and a climate change researcher at the University of St. Thomas.
Winters have warmed much more than summers, and nighttimes have warmed more than daytimes. Okay. And so the colder, darker time periods of our day and year have warmed more than when the sun is shining. And there's a simple reason for that. We have emitted greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. They trap heat 24 hours a day, every day of the year, and they have a bigger impact when the sun is not shining.
Less snow, more rain, more extremes. Abraham says Minnesota had 22 confirmed tornadoes in 2021. And in 2022, the insurance industry lost $2 billion due to extreme weather.
$2 billion. You can't run a business losing $2 billion. So, you know, people like to complain about insurance companies. Well, this is why the rates are rising. And this is because increased extreme weather. Weather is driven by two things, heat and moisture. So when you think about a hot, humid day in the summer, June, July, August, that's a day that's got a lot of energy in the atmosphere. And it's heat and moisture that drives these big storms. So we're increasing the temperature, which is increasing the heat, but we're also increasing humidity, because as air gets warmer, it can hold more moisture. And a lot of that moisture is coming from the oceans. We're heating the oceans, which heats the atmosphere, provides humidity to the atmosphere. And when you get added heat and moisture, you get bigger, more destructive storms, period. That's really the connection.
Minnesota's 18 ski hills are just a slice of the state's $238 million winter recreation and tourism pie. Lauren Bennett McGinty is executive director of Explore Minnesota, in charge of marketing the state to the rest of the country and the world.
In 2023 to 2024, that was when we really didn't have anything. There were several counties in the state declared a drought. There was little to no ice, so that people had to cancel plans at festivals and events. And so I think what goes through my mind now, specifically after kind of going through that with the community, is really how are we preparing for the possibility that maybe we don't have a lot of snow? Maybe it's not cold enough for ice, and what does that look like?
In other words, getting creative.
I want to welcome everybody to the Midway Meat Raffle.
Different destinations who maybe have like really cozy resorts and lodges are leaning into, you know, take advantage of the winter no matter what. You know, come for the cozy and stay for the fireplace and the s'mores and all of that.
Laura Oakes, News Talk 830 WCCO.
Snow was scant in unexpected places last winter, but in 2025, the white stuff is already everywhere. Chicago, for instance, got more than 15 inches of snow from November 29th through December 7th, 2025. Minneapolis, the Dakotas, Detroit, and more got snowfalls already that matched or exceeded the entire 2024 to 2025 accumulation. Here's more on winter 2025 in the Midwest.
Yay. To tell us just how cold it's actually going to get, we are joined by AccuWeather meteorologist Brian Thompson. How do we stack up in terms of those weather totals?
Yeah, I think we would have probably ended up pretty close to average, Tracy, but we had that little cold snap arrive, basically what we're still in now, arrive around Thanksgiving, and that helped push us to the colder side. It was about a half degree below average at Metro Airport for the month. A little drier than average, too, when you take all the rain and melted snow, about 1.7 inches of precipitation fell. But as far as snow goes, it was a relatively snowy November. We averaged about 1.9 inches of snow during the month of November, and we went up with 5.9 this time around, again, assisted by some of that cold weather and some of the snow we saw over the Thanksgiving weekend.
Okay, I repeat, yay. Now we're hearing terms like polar vortex, two words you never want to put together, getting thrown around with this bitter cold moving in. Is that what we're dealing with?
Yeah, it's certainly part of the reason. The polar vortex, which usually, as its name would suggest, is usually up around the poles, around the North Pole in this case, is going to be kind of dropping southward toward Hudson Bay. And whenever that happens, when the polar vortex gets displaced, that can help push cold air likely focused toward the upper Midwest, where temperatures are going to be below zero. This is a situation, especially early in the season, the Great Lakes are still helping us out a bit. Keep in mind, the lake temperatures are still not that cold yet. So these air masses, even as cold as they may be, are still going to modify a little bit. That's not going to make it feel any warmer, though, when we're talking about temperatures in the single digits to around 10. And it looks like we could have another push of some colder air and the high temperatures today. So not just this first push of cold air with the polar vortex, but there could be a couple of pushes of cold air as well.
A cold and snowy winter so far, but how was the summer? One word, smoggy. Canadian wildfires spread smoky skies over the Midwest and East Coast, and even into parts of the South. Here's a summer scene from Detroit.
Being on a bench at Sunset Point on Belle Isle, and while the Canadian wildfire smog isn't as bad as it was yesterday we had the worst air quality on the planet, the smoke is still visible in the air.
And that's not my fault.
That's Canadian Steve from London, Ontario. He's on Belle Isle taking in the sights. He says the fires are big and in very remote locations.
They're well north. The ones, at least that I know of, the ones northern Manitoba would be 400 or 500 kilometers north of Winnipeg.
With the air quality warnings coming in thick and fast, James Liddell from Detroit's West Side, he's been coming to Belle Isle since he was a young lad. This all seems very new to him.
I've been coming here all my life.
You never saw smoke like this?
Oh, no.
Michigan lawmakers, including Rep. Jack Bergman from up north, have urged his Canadian counterparts to do something, anything, to stop the fires. But as we heard, many of these wildfires are hundreds of miles from civilization. He's hoping for a significant wind shift soon. Reporting on Belle Isle, Tim Pampin.
Meanwhile, some people have been seeking help as they deal with poor air quality. Henry Ford pulmonologist Dr. Daniel Ouellette said he's having a lot of difficulty with his patients who have chronic respiratory diseases because of the air.
It can be a concern for everyone. What I would do is use a government website, which is fire.airnow.gov. You can go to that and geolocalize, and you can find the air quality right where you're at. And if the air quality index is over about 150, that will give you specific indications that everybody should stay inside on a day like that. And those are the days we're having right now.
Dr. Ouellette suggests wearing a mask if you're working outside. What exactly is in the air that's making it look so hazy, and why is this dangerous for us to breathe?
Yeah. So these wildfires, what happens is that the fires release carbon dioxide into the air. And so you have this carbon dioxide that contributes to the ozone layer. And then, of course, you also have little particulates. So you have soot, you have allergens that are floating in the air, and that's why you have this haziness.
Who are the most at-risk people with this air quality alert, doctor?
People with lung diseases such as asthma, COPD, and those with heart conditions, whether those have a heart failure or they have a history of cardiovascular disease like a history of a heart attack.
Dr. Wolf, is this something that we're going to have to deal with for a long time going forward? I mean, for a while there, we didn't have to deal with any of this. Now, the last couple of years, we've had these air quality alerts with the smoke from the Canadian wildfires. Is this an ongoing thing that we'll have to deal with for a number of years?
Honestly, I believe it is. Our world is getting warmer, and we see that because the allergen seasons are actually longer because you have more pollen that's blooming. And so with this warmer world that we have more instances where you have wildfires, which is what's happening. So this is an issue that will be persistent and may even get worse.
Karen Wolf, an asthma and allergy specialist with the Detroit Medical Center. And Dr. Wolf, what are some of the symptoms that our listeners should be looking out for?
usually shortness of breath, wheezing, which is like this whistling noise, chest tightness, coughing. I have so many patients whose eyes are burning. So if your eyes are burning or if your nose feels like it's burning as well, those are all symptoms from the wildfires and poor air quality.
Have you heard from patients this season concerned about this? And how big an issue has this been for some of your patients?
Have I heard from patients? I have heard nothing but symptoms with regards to these wildfires. I mean, I have patients who had mild asthma. And during these months, especially in April, and then, of course, the past couple of days, they have more shortness of breath. They're using their inhalers a lot more. Their eyes are itching. I mean, it has really been severe for patients with allergies and asthma.
Dr. Wolf, what do you tell your patients when they call you with their concerns about this?
Yeah, for asthma patients, I say, please do not skip using your inhaler. You know, in the summertime, everyone is out, picnics and enjoying family. And sometimes we forget to use our medication. So do not forget to use your inhaler. If you have an inhaler you're supposed to use every day, please use it. Make sure you bring your rescue inhaler around. If you have allergies, do not skip out on taking your allergy medication. With the smoke, we have pollen also coming from Canada. So beware of that.
Stay tuned for more on the year's biggest stories from this year-end On Deadline special from Odyssey.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.